Welcome to episode 4 of the Edisto TV podcast, produced by Edisto TV, connecting the Blackwater region. Here are our hosts, Hugo and Tom.
All right, thank you, Marge. Welcome back, everyone, to episode 4 of the Edisto TV podcast. I'm Hugo.
And I'm Tom.
And coming up this week, we're going to be talking about the developing plans for Blackwater. Pretty much, plans are in place for Blackwater. It's this Saturday, June 21st. We'd like to see everybody out at Aiken State Park. It starts at 9 a.m. We'll be talking about that some more a bit later. What else would you have this week, Tom?
We got a blog post and some video and some photographs from our trip down the river on Tuesday, and so we'll share links to that and talk about our trip a little bit. A lot of people saw your picture of the owl and some of that stuff, so we'll talk about all those things.
Yeah, and to be clear, when this airs, that will have been a couple of Tuesdays ago. We did it on Tuesday, June 10th was the day that we paddled the river. Also coming up this week, we have a conversation with Joel Jones about the Edisto TV Technology Initiative, and Tom will be guiding us through that conversation. We also had the event over in Columbia on Wednesday of this week, right, Tom?
That's right. We went to Connections on Wednesday, so it's been a busy week for Edisto TV. And then we're going to talk a little bit of history, and you'll be sharing one of your favorite subjects.
Exactly. We're going to talk about the Swamp Rabbit Railroad, which ran along the North Fork of the Edisto in the way back when. So, another episode of the Edisto TV podcast, and we will be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to the Edisto TV podcast.
And we're back. I'm Hugo. Tom's here with me. And Tom, tell me about Blackwater. We've been talking about this now in every episode. And next episode from this one, we'll be talking about how it went, because it is on Saturday, right?
Yes. There's going to be music all day. There's going to be paddling all day. There's going to be a bunch of educational stuff, which I think you can share. I know at least some people from DNR. I know there's people from Savannah River Ecology Lab with all the snakes and lizards and stuff. So anyway, I think it would be really good for the kids, the grandkids, just get outside by the river, see the water. I mean, you never know what you're going to see out there. It's really a wild place, so you really should check it out.
And you mentioned the musical entertainment we're going to be having. A band out of Columbia, Prettier Than Matt, is going to be on hand providing tunes. You might recall if you went to the stewardship event down in Colleton State Park, Prettier Than Matt were the folks who were giving us the music there, and we've asked them to come back.
And then Okefenokee Joe.
Okefenokee Joe is going to be with us. A lot of folks might remember Okefenokee Joe from his really groundbreaking documentaries on Georgia Educational TV back in the day. But Okefenokee Joe now lives here in the Edisto River watershed, and he has agreed to come out, probably do a couple of short shows talking about the Swampwise ethos that he has always been a strong proponent of. And he really does a great job entertaining the kids. Okefenokee Joe is going to be on hand. He's going to do a couple of short shows. He's mostly retired now, but he's agreed to step out of retirement and help us out, because he really cares about the Edisto like we do.
Yep.
For more information and archive podcasts, visit us at edisto.tv.
Moving on, Tom mentioned as we were doing the introduction that we did actually end up paddling the stretch of the South Fork from Aiken State Park down to the next bridge below that, which is Keetle's Bridge. It has various other names, but we're calling it that. And, well, I guess we should start by describing what that section of river is. It's about 9 miles of river. It took us about 8 hours to do it. We didn't go out of our way to paddle really fast, but we didn't really dawdle either. So it is a full day of paddling, wouldn't you say, Tom?
Oh, yeah. It was like I say, 8 hours, and we pretty much... I mean, we weren't loafing. I'd say that we were clear. We stopped to clear a little brush, took a few pictures. We had to portage. I portaged three times. Hugo portaged twice. So there was some, like, if you wanted to lay down in your boat, you could get under a log. But I personally rather get out and walk around sometimes.
I'll do anything to avoid getting out of my boat. Yeah. Anything.
But there was a lot of the ones where you kind of, it's about 6 inches maybe or 4 or 5 inches outside the water. And then you got to kind of, you know, paddle up on it and scoot your way over. So if you're not comfortable with that kind of stuff, you know, don't do that part of the river because you're really going to have to do some scooting and getting in and out of the kayak. If you're at all nervous about that kind of thing, mud where there's snakes and spiders, yeah.
You make it sound so nice. Well, no, I will point out, though, that when we did it, and you can see the stick gauge that is on the bridge at the takeout, we did it at a couple of marks below the 8 mark on that stick gauge. And I'm not sure what the correlation is with the downstream USGS gauging, but on that stick gauge, that was the level. If there was 6 inches less in the river when you tried it, you'd probably end up doing 5 or 6 more mandatory portages because there were a number of things that we were just barely able to shimmy over that with half a foot less water in the river, folks wouldn't be able to get by.
I'm going to check that gauge tomorrow and see what it looks like.
Yeah, and we'll try to keep an eye on that here in the few days leading up to the Blackwater Fest so that folks have an idea of what they're getting into if they want to try that. If you do want a paddling experience on the Edisto River and you don't really feel up to 8 hours of portaging and having fun in the mud, the Aiken State Park Canoe Trail. It's entirely within the boundaries of Aiken State Park. You put in upstream of the Aiken State Park Road boat ramp. You float down under the highway bridge, and you take out by Cabin Lake. That's a nice 45-minute to an hour, well-maintained canoe trail. It's a good introduction to the river. It's a very pretty piece of river. I've seen a lot of great birds paddling that. I actually take people there quite a bit for sort of beginner paddling experiences, and
good.
I've always had a good time paddling there at the state park. So if you're into the more ambitious thing, we're going to have a written trip report that we're going to put up, and as Tom said, we've got a bunch of pictures, and I've got some video as well that I'll be putting up to give folks an idea of what's there. But do want to be very clear, it's level dependent, and just because we got through it as easily as we did on Tuesday, if the river moves 6 inches, might be a completely different deal for you. It's never the same river twice.
And, hey, that brings up the news about our new YouTube channel. So there's the Edisto TV YouTube channel, and we posted our first video up there this week. It was you going through some of the kind of tighter areas there in the river where there was a lot of brush, and I just got about 20 seconds maybe.
I am kind of just a real-life action figure.
You look kind of like an action figure. You just kind of appear from the left and then zoom right through the middle.
I'm
awesome shot, really.
I'm known for my zooming. I do have a bunch of video that I shot, actually. Got some good pictures of a barred owl while we were out there. I'll include some of that. But mostly what I'm going to try to put up is stuff that gives you an idea of the character of the tough spots, so that if you do decide to paddle it, you do it with your eyes open and understand what you're getting into.
This is Tom from the Edisto TV podcast, and I just want to put in a word for Tyler Brothers. They've been serving the Blackwater region for over 100 years. They have a lawn and garden center with plenty of steel and Husky chainsaws, weed trimmers, blowers, plenty of Husqvarna mowers, and if you've got a lot of grass to cut, check out those Husqvarna zero-turn mowers. They have 3 or 4 different models to choose from. Check them out at tylerbrothers.net, or if you're on Facebook, you definitely want to follow them and get the latest deals from them. You can find them at facebook.com/tylerbros or search for Tyler Brothers, and you'll find Tyler Brothers for Carhartt clothing. They are the place for guns and ammo, your Carhartt work clothes. They've got camo from Carhartt and Drake and many more. Work boots from Georgia Boot, Rocky, Red Wing, Justin, Wolverine, and many more. They are the place for your safety shoes, your snake boots, your camo, whatever else you need when you are out in the swamp. Tyler Brothers, since 1904, it's the place for you to be on a Saturday afternoon. They're open 8 to 6, 6 days a week, closed on Sunday. Stay away from the superstores and visit Tyler Brothers in Wagner.
Welcome back. Now, here are Hugo and Tom.
All right, then. Moving on, Tom. We have a very interesting, I thought, conversation with our man Joel Jones about the Edisto TV Technology Initiative. And I think we're going to pretty much just jump right into that. Is there anything you'd like to say about it before we play the tape?
No, just I've had a few people ask me, you know, when I start talking about this internet and bring high speed, how we're going to do it. And Joel has done it. He's got 14 towers, 300 customers, and he's bringing high speed internet, as basically as fast as you want, out into the very rural areas, very much similar to where we are, underserved by high-speed internet. And so he's doing it, and I think it could be done down in the Edisto Basin as well.
All right, so here we go. This is our conversation we had earlier this week with Joel Jones.
My name is Joel Jones. I'm with Southern Computer Systems in Lake City, South Carolina. We've been in business about 30 years. We do a computer store. We have several electronic stores. We do high-speed internet, high-definition cameras, a bunch of electronics, and a bunch of Wi-Fi.
Well, I've been in computers for about 35 years, and about 10 to 12 years ago, Wi-Fi had just beginning. You know, people went home and getting dial-up and everything else, and as soon as it switched over to DSL, we had a lot of companies that actually wanted the camera system, you know, put like a mile away. And so we had to go out and find some equipment that would let us send the signal a mile away. Well, about 4 to 5 years ago, we had a company that lives 7 miles away from anything. Even the cell phones don't work there. And they wanted high-speed internet. So we partnered with Time Warner and became an authorized reseller and talked to the town, put up a high-strength antenna on one of the water tanks, shot 7 miles to another water tank, and then from that water tank, we're going, the whole town is serviced. And once we did one town, got the bugs worked out, then it's just been one town after another. A normal home user on DSL, which most people have, they try to guarantee them anywhere from a 2 to 3 by 1. So, I mean, the average consumer at home has like a 3 by 1 on a good day. And so what I did is we bought a large amount. Since that time, we've actually got 3 more companies in this same area that wanted their own internet. So we actually went back to Time Warner. We actually have a 200 by 20 right now, which I found a 3 by 2 works good for most consumers. They can do YouTube and, you know, download movies and stream on the television. If you do a 3 by 2, you can probably do right at about 100 customers easy.
Okay. And so that's what your typical service to a consumer is, a 3 by 2? Is that normal?
That is. That's the normal price that we charge. And we do have a lot of customers that want a little faster. So, you know, we have different price ranges, but the average person pays the 3 by 2, and they seem to be very happy with it.
Right, and so, that's, I think you said you're getting like $50 for that, but I'm getting what I would call low quality DSL, which supposedly is that fast, but I don't believe it really is most of the time, and I'm paying like $80 or $90. Does that sound right to you?
That's correct. And also, DSL is running over your phone line. It's very erratic, where if you go with Time Warner or Comcast or whoever, the cable is a lot bigger bandwidth coming in, and so it doesn't fluctuate as much.
All right, Joe, can I ask a question? If you're talking about sometimes customers want something faster or different, and that you're accommodating them with different price tiers, is it the same equipment and you've got some sort of management panel where you can set those things up, or how does that work?
We have a server that monitors every customer, and you set the speed that the customer wants, and then if you've got a customer that says, oh, I want, you know, a 10 by 10, I just log on to their account, and I give them a pin back in.
We're getting AT&T putting up a bunch of towers around here, which is, you know, primarily for cellular service and their data plans. Do you see a threat there that someday they could just, take off their 4 gigabyte or 8 gigabyte limits and just put you out of business? What do you think?
Well, no one knows what's going to happen in 5 to 7 years, but right now data it costs a lot for data. And I mean, I deal with Verizon and AT&T every day, but I mean, I'm going into the stores every day that has these air cards and stuff. But I mean, you know, these people are paying $80 a month for 5 gigabytes. I just don't see the big carriers opening that up and giving everybody free data.
Not just for me, but for the listeners to the Edisto TV podcast, can you explain, I mean, the service provider like Atlantic Broadband or AT&T or whoever gives you a connection at your headquarters?
Correct.
What does it take in terms of just a brief description of what it takes to go from the wire they give you to getting a signal to a consumer's home?
Well, there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes. If you want it all, I can give you all. But the main thing is you have to have a server that is CALIA compliant. That way, anywhere down the road, if a person does something wrong, the FBI can log in or SLED can log in and see actually what's happening to the customer. That's the first thing you have to have. Second thing is you have to have a tower at the main location, sending a signal to another tower or to a water tank, and then on that tower water tank you have several antennas, and then from that tower you can jump to another tower. Right now I'm up to 14 towers consecutive, and I'm up to about 30 miles away from the main location.
Okay, and then what does the consumer need at their location to take the signal from your sort of end tower in the string?
The consumer needs a small antenna that's about 1 foot tall by 6 inches wide. It's usually mounted on a small pole or eave. Again, it depends how far away they are from the tower. The wire comes down to a router, and that router protects you and them. That way you can't see what they're doing, and they can't see the rest of the network. And that's it.
All right. And from there, it works just like regular home Wi-Fi would.
That's correct, because inside the router will send out a Wi-Fi signal, so their whole house is covered. And there again, that's one thing we did. We tried, and I don't want to name names, but we tried Trendnet and some of these other companies on their routers. But there again, that was a problem in the beginning. We had to go to customers' house and keep changing routers. Since then, we went with a commercial router that costs about $70. But knock on wood, I haven't went back to another customer's house since we put these commercial routers in.
I appreciate your time, Joel.
Yes, sir.
I'm excited about what we're getting into here, and it's exciting to see what you've been able to accomplish just organically growing, you know, as the demand calls for it. So,
right.
I think it's great.
Yeah, educational for me as well, Joel. We'll get this edited, and it'll be up on next week's podcast.
Sounds good. Let me know if I can do something else. Have a good day.
And there we go. I hope that y'all found that interesting. And Tom, something that people have commented on the Edisto Concerns page when we've been posting links to the podcast is, you know, what's up with this internet stuff? Real quickly, explain once again for folks who may not have heard previous explanations why we are interested in this internet idea. And what it is that we're exploring in all of this.
Yeah, well, there's a couple aspects too. One is the internet service. So just trying to get high-speed broadband as defined in, you know, federal standards or whatever, like faster than DSL, basically, where you can do, you know, an unlimited, where you don't have gigabyte limits every month, so you can only do certain things, where you can totally wide open internet. So that's a big part of it. And then the other part is trying to bring together content of interest to the people in the Edisto River Basin. And we think there's an opportunity. There's a group connected through the river for hundreds of years, and yet we're still kind of, you know, from a media perspective, we go to four or five different markets for our news. So we see this as the Blackwater region. We think it's a really clearly defined area that have a common interest in the Edisto River and the area around it and the people around it.
And if you want to know more about Edisto TV, it's easy. You go on the internet and you type in edisto.tv, and we have a website there, and you can learn a lot more about what we're trying to accomplish with the technology initiative.
This is the Edisto TV podcast, connecting the Blackwater region.
We went to an event at ITology over in Columbia on Wednesday, which I guess would have been the 11th. And it was called Connections 2014. It was put on by ITology, ConnectSC, a number of sponsors. Tom, tell us a bit more about how we ended up at that thing and what we got from it.
All right, so what I learned is that the Connected Nation is a group dedicated to bringing internet everywhere in the U.S., especially rural, places that aren't being served. And SC Connect or ConnectSC.org is the group that's doing that here. And so anyway, they can provide a lot of data for us that, you know, as we start to look into where should we put the, where who wants this first, who needs this. And there's also, they help you get in touch with grant money and other things. So it's a really good group. I learned a lot about how things are working. Other people are trying to do what we're trying to do. So we just want to kind of keep it moving forward. There was some really interesting things there in media. So Hugo, I know you got to see a few things that I did not see. Can you talk about that part of the connections or what you thought generally?
I'd be happy to. A couple of the sessions that I don't think necessarily applied directly to connecting folks with high-speed internet that I thought were very interesting was they had Dr. Jerry Tessendorf from Clemson University's Digital Video Arts Program, and he had four of his students there who have been taking part in some very interesting digital animation projects. And the work the students are doing is positively world-class, very impressive. Dr. Tessendorf is an Academy Award-winning animator or creator of computer graphic animations. And I, just because it's kind of tangential to what I do for a living, I was fascinated by both of those sessions and just deeply impressed by the quality of work that the folks at Clemson are doing in that area. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about the advantages of having access to the internet for folks in the Edisto River Valley or watershed. The entire point of this is, if world-class work like that is being done by students at Clemson, they have to leave South Carolina to get to places with the infrastructure to support what they do.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, the amount of gigabytes and terabytes of data that they use.
And petabytes and zettabytes.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, yeah. It's how many frames per second and stuff like that. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Right.
I had no idea that computer animation was so sophisticated and you know, how much memory and processing and all that it uses is incredible.
And they are on the cutting edge there. I've worked with lots less sophisticated graphics from time to time, shall we say. But I thought that was very interesting. Had another interesting session right before we had to leave on making effective and pleasant user experiences. And it was not content I expected to be picking up at the Connections Conference. I thought it was a great session. I believe that ITology podcast these things or videocast, right? They were webcasting.
Yeah, a lot of the sessions were on the ConnectSC website.
All right. So hopefully if folks are interested in seeing what we saw, they can do that by visiting
ConnectSC.org.
ConnectSC.org website. And if Tom does his usual stellar job on the program notes, there will be links where you can download the podcast. So we'd like to invite you to check that out. And really want to thank the folks at ITology and from ConnectSC and the National Connect organization for the great information and a very pleasant day over in Columbia.
For more information and archive podcasts, visit us at edisto.tv.
All right, moving on now. Our new feature is history in the Edisto River Basin. And because we have not yet received a whole bunch of suggestions about things that we can cover in the history of the Edisto River Basin, I wanted to start with one that's close to home, and that is the Swamp Rabbit Railroad Line.
I love the Swamp Rabbit. I live in Wagner. If you go to Wagner Museum and you look up on the wall, there's a huge mural of the Swamp Rabbit. So it's very important to Wagner and the Severn area out where you are. And, you know, it's very important to the history of this area. So tell me more. I don't really know much detail. I just know it's big and very important.
All right. Well, folks can search for themselves online. I'm looking at the AbandonedRails.com Swamp Rabbit Line page, and they say that the original railroad was founded by a group that included members of the Wagoner Merchant Family of Charleston, which is where the name of the town of Wagner came from, and the Blackville, Alston, and Newberry Road was originally intended to develop open-pit kale and clay mines in the eastern side of Aiken County along the North Fork of the Edisto River, which is right where I live now. And that would allow that kale and clay to be connected at Blackville to the Charleston-Augusta line of the South Carolina-Georgia Railroad, by which it could be marketed to the world through Charleston. Now, they say construction started in about 1886, and the towns of Springfield and Sally were founded between Perry and Blackville. The new towns of Perry and Wagner, named for major investors, were created along the section of line, and the village of Severn, near the mines, also called Selvern sometimes, was named for the old hometown of the Charleston Wagoners, Severn in Saxony, Germany. And the railroad originally ended at a turntable in Severn, so what would happen would be they'd run the engine out to the end, and then they'd manually turn it around on this big turnstile and run it back the other way because they didn't have any other way of turning the train around.
Yeah, I understand you can still... You know, there's still some remnants of that thing back in there. There's, if you look on Google Earth, you can see there's a big, a couple of big pits out there. You know, I don't know what else is out there, but I have heard that circle thing is
yeah,
still
the turnstile.
Turnstile.
And just to go on a bit about what happened with the train, the Kalin venture ran into some problems soon after the railroad made it to Severn, but the railroad had become useful for things like turpentine and pine lumber because naval stores were big business here there leading up to the turn of the century. There were also a lot of crops like cotton and asparagus, the town of Wagner's signature crop for many years. Watermelon, which grow well in the Sandhill country, were another high-quality crop for which Wagner became recognized well outside South Carolina. Wagner melons were said to be superior even to those grown elsewhere in the Sandhills region. Probably said by people who grew watermelons in Wagner, but that's the way
no,
that
we make good... Hey, this sand makes good watermelon, just like it makes good potatoes. It's good for watermelon.
Okay, so after gaining some success serving markets that sprang up in place of the original Kalin venture, by the 1890s, the railroad and the train it operated had come to be known locally as the Swamp Rabbit, and then it briefly reorganized in 1896 as the Greenwood, Anderson, and Western Railroad, and then it kind of faded away. On a personal level, just downstream of where I live, you can still paddle down the North Fork of the Edisto and see the columns that held up the trestle where the Swamp Rabbit crossed the North Fork of the Edisto there. It's just upstream of the bridge that crosses on the road between New Holland and Fairview Crossroads. And it's been a couple of years since I was back there. Unfortunately, I don't have any pictures of it. But since we've mentioned this here, maybe our next paddling mission will be to go down from my house to the next bridge down and get ourselves some pictures of the old Swamp Rabbit Railroad crossing.
That would be good.
All right.
I've never been on the North Fork.
Well, let's get by the Blackwater event, and then our next paddling trip, we're going to go in search of the Swamp Rabbit.
Sounds like a plan.
And with that, this has been another episode of the Edisto TV Podcast. I'm Hugo.
And I'm Tom.
We'll see you in another week with more information about the Edisto and things Edisto related.
Thanks for listening to Episode 4 of the Edisto TV Podcast, produced by Edisto TV, connecting the Blackwater region.